All right. Let me ask you a question. Somebody tell me where in the world is Hertford County? Brother Chris, can you check the sound? It's not working for some reason. Okay. Where's Hertford County? Somebody tell me.
This is where?
Hertford.
Oh, Hertford.
It's a couple of counties over. That's all I can tell you. Okay. Now, who was, go ahead. This. Okay. Tell you what. Excuse me for a second. Okay. I'm really glad we're having visitors tonight. I'm doing. Okay. All right. You know what? Where's Hertford County? Okay. Who was born there? Just keep it back here, guys. We'll fix it later or buy a new one or something. Okay.
Catfish Runner.
Who?
Catfish Runner.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, somebody a little older than him. I mean, I was dead, but I mean.
Are you talking about Hertford Town or Hertford County?
Now,
is there a Hertford County? I thought Hertford was in Passamaquoddy County. I didn't know there was a Hertford County.
H-E-R-T-F-O-R. County. Anyhow, it's in North Carolina. All right, we'll get into the weeds here, okay? All right, Richard was born there, okay? Richard, that's okay. Is it, just forget it. All right, Richard Gatlin. Now, who was Richard Gatlin?
Gatlin Gun.
Yes, he was born there. Now, why did he invent the Gatlin Gun?
Kilmore people.
He's just went right here, brother. Sure, that's fine.
Kilmore Yankees, I guess.
No, actually, the North used it, I believe. And he used it for a couple of reasons. One, he invented it, he said when he invented it, he wanted to decrease casualties and prove the futility of war. Now, let me ask you a question. You think he succeeded?
No,
not so much. Okay. But the thing about the Gatlin gun, which made it such an amazing thing, is 200 bullets a minute. Bam, 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 bam. Let me ask you something. Has the devil ever pointed a spiritual Gatlin gun your way and went bam, 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 and just felt like there's repeated attacks over and over and over again? Well, if he has, you're just like the Apostle Paul. May or may not help you tonight, but that's what happened to the Apostle Paul. In this passage we're dealing with, this is the last of the section of our study in Paul's life from place to place. As we come to he's done the three missionary journeys, and now he comes to the scene, and he is being repeatedly attacked, and he winds up. Remember, this whole storyline began in chapter 21 last week, in verse 17, when he came to Jerusalem at the end of the third missionary journey, and he gave himself, or he committed himself back to the church at Jerusalem, and he reported back to the last missionary journey, and then what happened was, he went into the synagogue to do the ceremonial effort to prove his Judaism, and then the enemy saw him, and they created a ruckus, and the Roman authority there took him into custody, and all this stuff has happened. Okay, now look inside your bulletin for a moment, and look at the map you have inside your bulletin. Okay? And if you notice, okay, inside your bulletin there, in page. Okay. Look inside the map and find the city of Jerusalem, okay? You see that? Jerusalem? You can, I have a smaller one, I can just figure it out. Okay. Jerusalem, you see that?
Yep.
Okay. Now, look to your left to the coastline and go up, and you see Caesarea?
Yep.
Look at Caesarea there, okay? Now that's about, if I'm figuring that, that's twice. You see that little scale there? Tell me about how many miles you think that is based on the scale. About 65 miles, I think, 70 miles. About from here to Norfolk, I think. Something like that. I think that's the distance. Okay? Now this narrative between these chapters, okay, occur between these two locations, okay? What happens is he's captured, I'll give you the narrative, he's captured or taken into custody when he comes back from the missionary journey in Jerusalem. And then he's transported to Caesarea for his own security and for his own safety. Because there was a group that wanted to kill him. He gets up there and he has these different kinds of interactions. Now, look if you would please hold you, now look at the outline for a second, okay? On the outline, you notice there are four different interactions. The defense before the Sanhedrin, then the defense before Felix, and then the defense before Festus, and then the defense before Herod the Agrippa. And what happens is, these are the characters or individuals who are involved in interrogating and in confronting Paul with pressure and difficulty, okay? This takes place between these two geographical locations. Now, I show you this because if you notice the scale, the 20-mile distance there, if you take that and you look at the river between the Dead Sea and up to the Sea of Galilee, okay? And what's that river right there? The Jordan River, okay. Now you see the distance between that and the Mediterranean Sea. It's not like the Mississippi to the Outer Banks. Nothing like that at all. Everything's very compact, all right? You want to keep that in your mind when you think about the Old Testament and New Testament narratives. It's all pretty really closely knit, okay? Now, what you're going to find here is you have three people in political leadership. Letter B, you have Felix, and then you have Festus. And these two guys are procurators. They are people that have authority given to them initially from the military, and they became very, very powerful in the regions they covered. Now, Felix was replaced by Festus. Festus replaces Felix in this narrative, okay? And then Festus winds up bringing him under or to Herod Agrippa for his inquiry. Now, Herod Agrippa here, he's the last of all the Herods. You go back to the book of Matthew, the Herod there, okay, the great-grandfather of this one here, and so this is the last one of that family tree that had that authority to lead there under the approval or support of Rome, or the approval of Rome. Okay, that's what you have here. You have to go from Jerusalem to Caesarea and then back to Jerusalem. Okay, and during this narrative, all of this takes place. So I want to give you an overview of what's happening here. Okay, because there's a lot of moving parts here as we talk through this evening. Okay. Now, with that said, let's begin with this letter A, the defense before the Sanhedrin. Now, in chapter 22, okay, and verse 30, chapter 22 and verse 30, all right, it says, "And on the morrow, because he would have known the certainty before which they accused the Jews, he loosed him from the bands and commanded the chief priests and all his councils to appear brought Paul down and set him before them." So he's bringing him now in front of the council, okay, verse 123. "And Paul earnestly beholding the council said," and what's happening here, the council is the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin were these 70 men who were given the authority in Jerusalem and then by Rome right before this time, a much more expanded area. And they were the Jewish leaders that were allowed to oversee the Jewish community. They could not put people to death, but they were very authoritative. They were the final authority in Jewish practices and in Jewish conflict. Now, here's the deal. Had the Jews that hated Paul not created a ruckus, if they simply gone to the Sanhedrin and the Sanhedrin wanted to have a meeting to inquire of Paul when he believed, they could have that take place, and Rome would have never gotten involved. Why did the political and military authority get involved with Paul and his conflict with the Jews? What's the answer?
They're Roman citizens.
Not because he's a Roman citizen.
Because of the peace. They didn't want disturbance.
Because during this time, there were a lot of messiahs and leaders coming onto the scene. Remember this one towards last week about the guy who led some people up the mountain and said that the wall would, the building would tear down, come down on his voice, and there was a lot of rebellion. There's a lot of rebellion going. This is like almost like Afghanistan, in a sense, in the context of New York City. It's like taking that conflict over there with all that tribal stuff going on and all that killing people, all that, and put it inside New York City in that context, because Jerusalem was a big metropolitan area. So the point being that the Roman government prized peace. In that sense, the Roman government is not unlike the Chinese government. You know, think about the current history of China. China's government is their, if you would, not to be funny, but their death on the lack of conflict. You know, Tiananmen Square, the whole thing, remember that? I mean, they do follow the theological Barney fight. They nip it in the bud. I mean, there's conflict coming, they nip, and that's why they're involved with this, okay? So the Sanhedrin press him, okay? Now, I want you to notice two things. I've got several lessons here for me to give you, okay? Lesson number one, that's what we're going to focus on. The value of a clear conscience. Notice what Paul says here. And Paul earnestly beholds the men in verse 1. Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day. And the high priest, Ananias, commanded them that stood by him to smite him on the mouth. Then Paul said unto him, God shall smite thee, thou whited wall, for sittest thou to judge me before after the law, and commandest me to be smitten contrary to the law. And Paul said, listen, hey, you're hating me. That's illegal. That violates the law. But the point here is that he has a clear conscience. Now, why this is important for two reasons. First of all, remember this, nothing will shut up your witness for Christ quicker than guilty conscience. If you have a guilty conscience, you are not going to be very interested in picking up a card tonight. Now, this is not a test to see if you have a guilty conscience to pick one up or not. Obviously, don't misinterpret what I'm saying. But the fact is that you're not going to invite people at work tomorrow to come to the musical if today you act like a pagan at work. You're not going to feel like, right? That's true. Now, here's the deal. Many Bible scholars believe that possibly Paul used to be on the Sanhedrin. Don't know that. But the fact is, they would have known Paul. They would have known, because Paul was not some man of no consequence before he got saved in the Jewish community. He was a man of significant consequence. So it was important. He was basically going back. And who was sometimes the hardest people to witness to in your life? Who was sometimes the hardest people to witness to?
Family.
Well, ever wonder why that is? The people you love the most, sometimes, I don't know all the reasons for that, but maybe it's because they know us better than anybody else. Maybe that, but a clear conscience. Number two, the importance of a humble spirit. Not only Paul had a clear conscience, but he had a humble spirit. Now, what do you mean, humble spirit? Well, watch what happens here. Was it right that Ananias had Paul slapped? Was it right or wrong? It was wrong. Now look at verse 4. And they that stood by said, Revilest thou God's high priest? Then said Paul, I wish not, brethren, that he was a high priest. For it is written, thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of the people. Now what is Paul doing? Paul is saying, listen, I didn't know he was the high priest. Now, why didn't Paul know he was the high priest? Well, Paul's been gone for a number of years, and Paul has not, he's been in Jerusalem for short periods of time since this guy's become high priest, but be as it may, he didn't know, okay? And how does he respond? He responds with a humble spirit. He's saying, you know what? I was wrong in saying that, okay? And by the way, you might want to know about his accusation, his statement there, God shall smite thee, thou whited wall. Because in this period of time, they would use that whitewash to cover dirty walls. Okay? It wouldn't really get rid of the problem, just cover it up. Okay? So he's basically saying, you're a hypocrite. you are under conflict, it won't stop. If the devil's using a Gatling gun and hitting you with spiritual darts, like on a rapid, bam, 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 literally, sometimes you get so focused on the pain and the problem, you forget to measure your response. You know? Well, they deserved it. Well, they might deserve it, but it's not right for you to say it. You shouldn't say it. You gotta guard yourself. You gotta guard yourself. And be careful what you do or do not say. And a humble spirit needs to be part of our presentation of the gospel of Christ. And in our demeanor when we are under spiritual attack. Remember, hold your place here. Remember, look at Ephesians for a second. Okay? This is something you've got to keep in mind always when you're in a spiritual battle. And if you're going to stand for Christ, you're going to be in a spiritual battle. But look at Ephesians chapter 6. This is one of the most significant verses to keep in mind. If you've got people at work that are edging you on, here's what's going to happen. If you're trying to live for God at work, other people are not going to like it. Now, why are they not going to like it?
Convicted.
Do what?
Convicted.
They're convicted. They're convicted by your righteousness, by your attempt to live godly. So they're going to edge you on and try to put pressure on you and try to, and what do they try to do when they put that pressure? What do they want to see happen? Do what?
See you fall.
See, you say that you shouldn't have said, blow up, bam, you know? And they can say, and you call yourself a Christian. And why do they care? They don't usually do that too much if you're like a Redskin fan or a Yankees fan, unless they're really obsessed with sports. They don't care. But they're convicted, and it medicates their convicted heart. Your failures medicate their, and that's why it's so dangerous when we begin to compromise and to become like the world in our relationships. It lessens our chance to give the gospel to them. Now look at Ephesians chapter 6 and look at verse 12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. These constant battles that come our way, it's a spiritual battle. I'm not fighting against a person. It's a spiritual battle. And I've got to keep a humble spirit about myself. I can't be prideful. I can't be arrogant. I can't be self-asserting. Okay? I've got to have a humble spirit. Okay? Now that's Sanhedrin. Okay? So now he's going to be brought before Felix. Okay? And now this happens. Notice you have in the outline. Okay? You see this outline, the defense before the Sanhedrin in 22:30 through 23:11. Then it shows you what happens in the other sections of Scripture, that there's a plot to kill Paul in verses 12 to 22, and then Paul is imprisoned at Caesarea, okay? Because what happens because of this plot, okay, look down at verse 23 of chapter 23. And he called unto him two centurions, saying, make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea. This is how Paul gets from Jerusalem to Caesarea. Get 200 guys and horsemen, 70, and spearmen, 200, at the third hour of the night. Now he's getting himself a small army here, because he doesn't want anybody to bother Paul, because he has learned since then, Paul is a citizen of Rome. So he is like, we're going to protect this guy. Can't let something happen to the package. Okay? So he gets them, okay, and he wrote a letter after this to this man, okay? Claudius Lysias, that's his name, unto most excellent governor Felix, sending greetings. So he sends him a letter explaining basically what's going on here. So he winds up now in Caesarea in front of Felix, okay? Now in the Felix discussion here, I want to give you two more lessons, lessons three and four. Lessons three. In this situation here, okay, what do we learn? Number four, the father of lies uses lies to attack God's work. Okay? He uses lies to attack God's work. And what happens is this, okay? Paul comes over to Felix, gets taken up to Felix under guard, okay? And they came to Caesarea in verse 33. Note from verse 33. Who, when they came to Caesarea and delivered the epistle. You ever heard the term epistle in the Bible? What's an epistle?
Letter.
Yes, not another kind of an apostle. It's an epistle. It's a letter, okay? That's just a generic word, okay? To the governor, presenting Paul also before him. And when the governor had read the letter, he asked of what province he was. This is important. And when he understood that he was of Cilicia, which was a Roman province, he said, verse 35, I will hear thee. Now, why did Felix ask him, okay, what province he was in? Because he had to have the legal jurisdiction. Because he was a government official, and he could only have the authority if Paul was from a Roman town or a city, okay, a province. And so he has the legal, if not, he had to wait and got permission from Rome to be able to proceed. So that's a legal matter. So he's taking it as legal obligations. Like a typical bureaucrat or politician, just trying to cover himself, make sure that he doesn't do anything he shouldn't do. Okay? Now, verse 1. And after 5 days, Ananias, the high priest, descended with the elders. Now watch this. Felix is going to wait now for the guys to come from Caesarea so he can have a hearing of the situation. Okay? Now watch what the Jews do. The high priest comes down, and certain orator named Tertullus, who informed the governor against Paul. So what they've done, they've gotten the hired gun. They've gotten the best lawyer in town. They went ahead and gotten somebody from the big firm that has 5 or 6 names in the big office building. And they brought him to be their spokesman because they're trying to win the case against Paul. And what he's going to do is, look at verse 5. As he's talking, look how he describes. He's describing now to Felix. This is how he's describing Paul's ministry. For we found this man a pestilent fellow, a nuisance, a bother, and mover of seditions among all the Jews. Now those were key words. In our culture, we have key words. It's a civil rights issue. It's an equal rights issue. Whatever. Those phrases. And there are many other phrases we have in our culture that they're like buzz button words. And if those words are used, then people ignite or connect with it. Now he's trying to use words that a Roman leader would connect with and say, hey, that's wrong. He's causing conflict. Okay? That's not true about Paul. He's lying. But he knows how to lie effectively. And the devil knows how to lie effectively. You have to understand that. John 8:44 tells us that Satan is the father of lies. Okay? Verse 6. He goes on. Who also hath gone about to profane the temple, whom we took and would have judged according to our law. And what he's saying is this. Felix, we were just trying to take care of our business. We're the Sadducees. I mean, we're the Sanhedrin. We're supposed to have the authority to rule on religious matters. And all we were trying to do, you know, not going to tell you we were trying to get a packet that wants to kill at the first opportunity. We don't want to talk about that right now. But so this guy's up there. He's just a smooth talker. He's lying. Don't be surprised when the world lies and says it so convincingly. That's what's happening here. Okay? Truth number 4. Truth is the right response to lies. Truth is the right response to lies. Now, Paul has his turn to talk. Okay? We'll pick his dialogue up in verse 11. Because that thou mayest understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship. What's he saying? He said, you know what? I didn't have time to make up a big revolt here. I've only been here for a few days. Okay? Let's just, you know, maybe let's have a little bit of perspective here, Felix. I wasn't there that long to get me a group together. Okay? And verse 12. And they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogue nor in the city. Okay? And there was, you know, They didn't catch me doing anything. I wasn't there doing anything with anybody. They can't give you any example of me doing that, okay? Verse 13, neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me. So he's just being truthful. You know, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. I didn't do this. I was there. Everybody saw me. You know? It's all good. I didn't do any of that. But now watch, not only the truth of what he's done, but the truth about what he believes. Look at verse 15. Okay? Verse 14. But this I confess unto thee, that after the way, that's a reference to the Christianity, which they call heresy, the way is a reference to Christianity, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things that are written in the law and the prophets. That's a wonderful verse. He said, you know what? I do believe in Christ the Messiah. I believe in the way. I believe that Jesus is my Messiah as the Old Testament teaches. What is Paul doing? He's responding to lies with truth. That's why, listen to me, always be in the habit of operating in the parameter of truthfulness with people. You know, even small things, don't let we went lunch today and I left the money for the meal, and I walked out and my brain calculated again the tip. I have a standard I use for the tip. It's not important what it is, but it's a standard. I think it's the one God would have me to do. So as I was walking out, I remembered, I redid the math real quick, and I was short a little bit. Not much, but short a little bit. So I stopped and went back and said, oh, I need to give you this little bit of money here. It wasn't a lot. But I had to give a little bit more. Why? Because for me, that's what I know I need to do. I'm not saying you need to do it the way I do it. If you don't have a thing, I'm just saying you're wrong. You should do it. But for me, I need to operate within truthfulness. I need to do what's right every time. So I got to think about that. I got to be careful of situation ethics where I defend my conscience. You ever have a guilty conscience and then talk yourself out of it? Now, you don't. But other people do. Okay, when you start to feel bad about it, and then the more you talk to yourself, the less bad you feel about it. All of a sudden, you say, you know, I went all along. That's what we can do, can't we? We can't wait, come on. Don't you know somebody that does that? Okay, well, that's you gotta respond to lies with truth. But that's hard to do. Now watch this, if you're not used to living in the truth. If you're not in the habit of keeping yourself accountable to what is true. All right. Well, then, what happens is, Felix exits stage left. Okay, so he's recalled. Okay, verse 27 of chapter 24. But after 2 years, Festus came into Felix's room. So 2 years later, he's been replaced. And Felix, willing to show the Jews pleasure, left Paul, what's the last word? He's been incarcerated for 2 years. He's been in Gitmo now for 2 years, okay? Now why? Not because he'd done anything wrong, but he's been arrested here, okay? I'm saying he's been kept under this restriction, okay? And no one's done anything with him, okay? No one's done anything at all with him. Felix leaves him there, okay? Because he's the new guy on the block. And so, politics has never changed. You know, the book I told you about, Churchill's just today becoming prime minister. Okay, I'm slow getting there, but he's finally becoming prime minister. Okay, but you know what? As I listen to English politics, I don't understand all the terms they use about Lord of the Admiral, all that kind of stuff. I try to follow it, but it's very difficult. But the point is, politics is politics. It's always been that way. It will always be that way. It was that way here. He wants to please the people. Okay? Why? So he can keep his job. That's what he wants to have happen. Verse 1 of chapter 25. Now when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul. 2 years later, these guys won't let it go. This happened 2 years ago. I mean, I think there's a little report came out today in the news. Did you hear about the report that came out?
Mm-hmm.
There's a little report came out in Washington. Maybe when you hear it, if you watch any news, more than 15 seconds, you'll hear about it. Okay? But this is 2 years later, okay? Like, don't these guys have a life? But they so hate Paul and hate the gospel. Lesson number six. Those that oppose the gospel are relentless. And by the way, they're often ruthless, but they're relentless. Now, look at verse 3. And desired favor against him that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. Okay? They want Festus to relocate Paul so they can get him out in open territory. Why? So they can kill him. These guys' hatred is relentless. What I'm telling you is this. If you stand for Christ, there's always going to be people opposing you. There's always going to be the devil and his demons and those that are unsaved not wanting to hurt you. And you can never let up. You can't ever run automatic pilot. You can't say, it's Monday and I'm tired. I don't want to be here. I don't care what anybody thinks. I just want to, bang, have my way. What was your testimony? The devil's going to come to you when you're just tired and you're frustrated and you're tired of trying to do the right, you're tired of the pressure, you're tired of trying to live the life. The only one at work is trying to live for God, and they're a bunch of pagans, and let's just fit in. That's what happens. Okay? That's the pressure. Verse 4, but Festus answered that Paul should be kept in Caesarea, and he himself would depart shortly. So that's what happened. They want to have Paul brought back at this point, but that's not what happened. Okay? Now, number 6, okay? Do what you can to protect what you have. I don't want you to take the humility. Number 6, do what you can to protect what you have. The humble spirit, point number 2, does not mean that you don't take the appropriate steps to protect what you have. What happens here, Paul knows of the plot to kill him. And he knows if he gets sent again back to Jerusalem, it's going to be a dead man walking. Because he's going to be killed. So what's he do? Look at verse 10. Then Paul said, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. He then appeals to Caesar, which was his right as a Roman citizen, which takes him out of the loop. Okay? And so that's what he's doing here. He's taking advantage of what he can do in order to protect his life. A humble spirit does not say, well, whatever you want to do to me and however you want to misuse me, let's say you have a supervisor over you at work and he's mistreating you because of your testimony. And yet where you work, there's protocol for dealing with conflict in the HR department, okay? There's a policy in place. If you have a supervisor, there's a conflict with person number letter A that's right over you, you can go to person number B. Or maybe the way the thing's constructed, there's a person, G over here, is a person everybody goes to, there's a conflict, and G comes in and does some problem, conflict resolution. If you have that, there's nothing wrong with using that. There's nothing wrong with exercising your thought. When they told us, well, you can have a 5x5 sign out here, we said, really? At the $600,000 for 3/4 of an acre, you want to have a 5x5 sign? We don't think so. And they said, well, that's what we do. I said, now, what we said? We said, listen, fax us over all the documentation that proves that point. So they sent they faxed it over to the office. So I said, you know, I read this. I don't read that at all. Well, we just like our church to have small signs. I said, well, the pagans out here selling all this whiskey and ruining people's lives, they have big signs. That's what I told her. She now runs the people home down here. Anyhow, that's another story. But anyhow, I hope they gave her a hard time. No, anyhow, that was a flash speaking. All right, but the point is that there is, it's okay
when it fits into God's plan for you to utilize the resources or exercise your rights when it's for the betterment of doing God's will. Remember a couple of weeks ago I told you, he said a couple of weeks ago, preach, I can't remember anything he said a couple of weeks ago. I understand that. But a couple of weeks ago, I used the illustration, okay, about being in the restaurant and somebody's bringing you something that you didn't order, and just sort of whining about it and making a big fuss about it, just accept it. Just being willing to be inconvenienced for no other reason, just to practice being inconvenienced and have a good attitude about it. And if you want to do that sometimes, that's a good thing to do if that happens to you. But you don't have to do it. I mean, you can, in a polite way, request whatever you have to request. But the point is, I don't want you to get the idea that a Christian never stands up for himself or herself in the right context. Okay? Now, gate number 7, I have to close. It's 15. He then winds up before Herod Agrippa. Herod's last of the Herods, okay? And let me give you lesson number 7, okay? Use every opportunity to give the gospel in every situation. Use every opportunity to give the gospel in every situation. Let me give you the reference, 26:15, if you want to read it. 26:15, before Herod. Now listen, you can't always give the whole gospel. I was working out at lunchtime today. I was, before I left to meet for a lunch meeting, I went and worked out at lunchtime. And there, I met Buddy. And he's a new guy in the area. He's retired. He lives on Bay Drive. And we got to talking. Well, the significance of where we were at in the hallway there, what he was doing, what I was doing, didn't allow any time to give up the gospel. Not in that case to share my faith. And he talked about his Presbyterian background and his little method on the side, whatever. All I had time to do was this. I said, well, you know what? And then because we were dressed in our workout clothes and didn't have anything on me to give them. And I said, well, look, you know, Christmas is coming up. We have a Christmas Eve service. You told me the church was. We have a Christmas Eve service at 5 and 7. Oh, I know what Christmas Eve, yeah, I like to go to Christmas Eve. Well, 5 and 7 is easy to remember. So I know his name, okay? I took the opportunity that I had. So take the opportunities you have. That's why you do get the cards. You do invite people. Take the opportunities you have to give out the gospel. These are all lessons from Paul. Now, after the Christmas break, we're done with now Paul until after the New Year. So we won't talk about Paul again for a whole year. Well, until next year, which is 4 weeks. And then when we come back, we're going to work on Paul's life going from book to book. Each of the books he wrote, where he wrote it, when that context was, to put it in perspective as we work through his life. Okay? All right. So let's pray. After we pray, go out the doors, get the cards, the baskets, okay? If you need tickets, see Karen. And tomorrow night, what time is choir and play practice?
6:30.
That wasn't real strong. What time is play and choir practice tomorrow?
6:30.
There you go. All right. Father, thank you for tonight. Thank you for this lesson, this message. Speak to our hearts through it in Jesus' name. Amen.